From the Umsland Grand Center Community Room, welcome to St. Louis Public Radio's political debate featuring the four Republican candidates seeking the nomination for Missouri governor in next month's primary election. I'm Don Marsh. We welcome the candidates as well as our NPR affiliate station audiences in Kansas City, Springfield, Rolla, Cape Girardeau, Columbia, and Maryville, and our community room audience here. It is with pleasure that I introduce the candidates. I ask our studio audience to please hold your applause until after all have been introduced. They are Catherine Hanaway, former U.S. Attorney and former Missouri House Speaker, author and former Navy SEAL Eric Greitens, businessman and former Marine officer John Bruner, and three-time Missouri Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder. You may applaud. The candidates will be questioned by my St. Louis Public Radio colleagues, Joe Manis, Jason Rosenbaum, and myself. Now, the ground rules for tonight's debate are as follows. Each candidate will make 90-second opening statements and make brief closing statements. There is no time limit on question responses, but I will interrupt if they are prolonged or if the candidates drift, as they sometimes do. We expect and encourage interaction as long as it's orderly interaction, one person speaking at a time, please. Any candidate directly attacked by a rival will be given the opportunity to respond to it. Lastly, I will ask the audience to remain silent throughout the course of the debate and refrain from any distracting response, pro or con, to the candidates or to their comments. With that, we will begin with opening statements, the order of which was determined by a drawing just a few moments ago. And it begins with John Bruner. John?
Well, welcome to all those here and those listening at home or driving in your car. My name is John Bruner. I'm a businessman and a manufacturer. I've had the privilege to serve on the mission fields and the honor to serve in the Marine Corps. I'd like at this point to give a salute to all veterans who are here or listening at home. You know, I'm the only constitutional conservative outsider in this race. I'm not here to jumpstart a political career. I'm not here to extend a political career. I'm simply here to do the job. And my friends, I can't be bought. I brought billions of dollars of business back to Missouri, created hundreds if not thousands of jobs that have lasted a lifetime. My mission for Missouri is a plan to improve our economy, to fund our roads, and to improve our schools. You know, as your governor, I will fight to defend life. I will fight to defend our First Amendment, our religious liberties, and of course fight for our Second Amendment rights. And as your governor, I'll deliver results for a change. You know, in a manufacturing business or in any business, or even on the family farm, if you don't get results, you go out of business. I'm here precisely to work for you, to bring the American dream across this great state of Missouri, to take us from 47th place and back up to first. In the Marine Corps, we are always challenged, lead, follow, or get out of the way. I'm ready to lead. I ask for your vote, your support, your prayers, and I'm looking to serve.
Thank you, John Bruner. Catherine Hanaway.
Thank you, Don. Thank you to all those who are listening. Thank you to those who are here in attendance. Thank you to our hosts. Our government is too big and it's broken. And it won't be fixed by four more years of failed policies and failed leaders. It'll be fixed when we cut taxes, bring jobs back to Missouri, make our communities safe again, and improve our schools. It can't be fixed by explosive ads from candidates with no experience. You would not pick a first-time pilot, a first-time heart surgeon. I encourage you not to pick a governor who will need on-the-job training. I'm applying to you for the job of governor, and I am ready to lead on day one. As Speaker of the House, I passed concealed carry, ended public funding of abortions, reformed the state's adoptive and foster care laws, passed the Amber Alert law. In fact, the Post-Dispatch, which is no great friend of mine, wrote that I even changed the culture in Jefferson City. But it's been more than a decade since I've run for any office. Since then, I've prosecuted over 4,000 crimes, including putting corrupt politicians behind bars. I've worked in the private sector and been raising our children with my husband. I'm running for office for the first time in over a decade because we need a leader who is experienced, has the right policies and the right values to make Missouri safe and strong again. Thank you.
And thank you, Catherine Hanaway. Eric Reitens.
I'm Eric Reitens. I'm the only person here tonight who is not a professional politician. I've never run for office before. I'm a Navy SEAL, an entrepreneur, and a concerned husband and father. And I'm here tonight with a very simple message. The politicians have failed us in both parties, and we can't trust them to fix the mess they've created. I'm a conservative and an outsider running for governor because I can't stand by any longer and watch as politicians hurt people. Government at every level is broken. They fail to do what they're supposed to do and love to do what they shouldn't do. You've got the VA failing veterans, the EPA harassing farmers, the IRS targeting people of faith, and this administration failing to keep us safe from radical Islamic terrorism. And right here in Missouri, thanks to these professional politicians, our home state has become a state known for serial corruption, national embarrassment, and epic failure. You've got the failure and lawlessness at Ferguson, the chaos at the University of Missouri, and the crisis in our economy. Now, my boxing coach, he always said, if you want different, do different. If you want a different result, then you're going to have to take different action. And that's what this campaign is all about. I've spent my life taking action, and I know that together we can shake up Jeff City and put an end to politics as usual.
Thank you, Eric Reitens. Now, Lieutenant Governor Kinder.
Thank you, Don, Joe, Jason, for welcoming us here to this great forum. This evening, there are four candidates up here bidding for your support. Three of them offer a lot of rhetoric, a lot of empty promises, a lot of assertions that so-and-so is a conservative. I offer you a proven record of actually delivering wins for our side, of actually doing the tough work to build majorities and actually produce results for the conservative side. Now, the number one job of our next governor will be to restore law and order in our state, reducing crime, and restoring peace to our streets. I spent Monday, a good chunk of my Monday, Independence Day, in Ferguson. I returned to Ferguson, where last summer, last July, I announced my candidacy in the Delwood-Ferguson area to send a message. The message was, no more Fergusons, never again. I have the relationships with the folks up there and around the St. Louis region and around this state to put petty concerns aside, to unite urban and rural Missouri, to work with local mayors who couldn't even get their phone calls returned by this governor, to not be the kind of absentee office holder that the attorney general was when crime was exploding in our state. We need a proven leader with a proven record you can trust, not someone who needs 2 years of on-the-job training.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor Kinder. Now we'll begin with the questions, and we'll start that with my colleague Joe Menace. Joe?
Hi. Thank you all for being here. Several of our listeners are interested in the health care issue. All four of you have said previously that you're opposed to any sort of expansion of Medicaid as recommended by the Affordable Care Act. Are there any circumstances that might prompt you to support changing your mind? And I'm addressing this first to Catherine Hanaway.
Thank you, Joe. There are no circumstances under which I would expand Obamacare through Medicaid in Missouri. Obamacare, it has failed in every regard. We were told that it was going to reduce premiums. On average, premiums went up for the exchange in Missouri over 23% last year. We were told that more people were going to have health insurance. 4 million people lost health insurance last year. We were told that it was going to make the insurance marketplace more competitive. In fact, the biggest insurer in Missouri, one of the two biggest, has recently pulled out. We do need to put competition back into health care. We do need to reduce the cost and make it more accessible. We do that by allowing people to choose whatever insurance policy best suits them and their needs from any state and not restrict it by state lines. We do it by rooting out waste, fraud, and corruption in the healthcare system, and I know it's there because I prosecuted it as U.S. attorney. I prosecuted healthcare companies. I even put the chief executive of a nursing home company in jail for neglecting his parents. I'm sorry, not his parents. Excuse me. I looked at my parents just now. I think my dad might have been dozing off, which is never a good sign, for for neglecting his patients. And the other thing we need to do is expand the health care that's being provided in rural areas by expanding the scope of practice for physician's assistants and nurse practitioners. There's a lot we can do. As governor, I will expand affordability and accessibility for health care.
Joe, look, Obamacare is a broken program that's been filled with broken promises. And I have direct experience of what it's like to deal with government health care. When I came back from Iraq after I'd been hit by a suicide truck bomb, I went to the VA hospital right here in St. Louis, John Cochran Hospital. At that hospital, over 1,000 patients were needlessly exposed to HIV. They were needlessly paralyzed. And do you know what happened to that hospital administrator? She was promoted. She was given a job with a $160,000 lifetime salary, a free apartment, and a lifetime pension. There was no accountability. We don't see accountability in those government programs, and we need to fight against them. And what we have here, what's so sad, is that we have outstanding results in the private sector. Look at what's happening with Mercy Hospital right here in the state of Missouri. We are one of the world leaders in telemedicine and in virtual care, making sure that we can provide excellent world-class care to our rural patients. Mercy has achieved outstanding results. They've seen their patients in ICUs, the time, average length of stay going down 35%, fatalities going down 30%. That's thousands of people whose lives were saved and were able to leave the hospital. When I'm governor, we are absolutely not going to expand Obamacare. We're going to make sure that every person in Missouri has access to world-class quality care.
Thank you, Mr.
Greitens, are we going to expand Medicaid? You said we're not going to expand Obamacare. Would you? The question was, under any circumstances, would you expand Medicaid?
Speaker Hanaway, my answer was very clear. I think it was clear to everyone who's here. It might not have been clear to you. We are not going to expand Medicaid. We're not going to expand Obamacare.
Thank you. I think that's the first time you've ever answered that question.
If I may ask you, Catherine Hanaway, I don't know how many millions of people have signed up for Obamacare. Several, 7, 8, 10 million, something like that. What do you do with them?
Well, you give them the opportunity to buy insurance from any state in the country. You don't throw them out. I didn't say let's repeal Obamacare. What I said was let's not expand it through Medicaid here in Missouri, and let's give people more choices so they can pick a policy that they can afford, has the coverage they want, and allows competition to happen in the insurance marketplace.
Do I get to get into this?
Yes, you and Mr. Bruner
do. Can we lay some facts on the table? I think the people want to hear facts and fair argument laid on the table, not personal attacks. Here's what the facts are. In 2000, Mel Carnahan's last year as governor, Medicaid consumed $1 out of $5 of the state general revenue budget. Today, without expansion, Medicaid consumes $1 out of $3 of your state general revenue budget. It is growing at a rate that is nearly exponential. It is growing at a rate faster than the growth in education funding. And the reason our superintendents and classroom teachers across the state have a complaint about funding not being what they would like it to be is because the explosive growth in Medicaid is crowding out K through 12 education funding and higher education funding, which is sending tuition higher. There should be no expansion of Medicaid. Medicaid, that is a bargain the state taxpayers cannot afford. And the states that have embarked on that road, such as Illinois and others, are looking at serious fiscal trouble. Anybody who tells you that you can expand Medicaid and expand education funding without a big tax increase has total contempt for his listener and believes he can pull the wool over your eyes.
You know, I think we've gotten a little off the track with the Medicaid issue here before John Bruner's had an opportunity to answer Joe's question.
I tell you the issue here, and all these facts are true here in terms of the expansion here. Some studies have shown it cost up to $3 billion over the next decade. But, you know, as an outsider, as a business person who always looks for alternatives and how to solve problems, you know, one of the more compelling issues, and this was brought up to my niece. She worked her way through college and has a doctorate now in nursing. This whole issue of advanced practical registered nurses and nurse practitioners is an amazing. We're 50th in regulation in Missouri, 50th place. And what does that mean? They're not allowed to practice up to their experience level. and they're trained, and they're very experienced. You know, 13 other states have this freedom for them to practice. Now, a Duke University study said this will save $390,000 a day, $100 billion a year. This is just one area. The portability for physicians in terms of their licensing is important. Telemedicine is important. There's a lot of opportunities, not just we can't do it, but how do we get the job done?
Back to our questioners, and this time it's Jason Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Don. When much of America woke up this morning, they might have seen film of Alton Sterling being shot and killed by Baton Rouge police officers. These images evoke the memory of similar instances in New York, Cleveland, South Carolina, and the St. Louis region. The Ferguson Commission recommended bringing in an outside prosecutor and the Missouri Highway Patrol to look into any killings that involve a police officer. Would you support or oppose this idea? Why or why not? And I'll throw this first to Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder.
I would entertain those proposals. I don't have any problem with a look over the top from the Missouri Highway Patrol, for which I have unbounded respect, and I think all Missourians do. If people want an outside look from an agency not investigating itself, I'm okay with that. Let me tell you what the larger problem is here, though. The larger problem is we don't solve this problem of distrust in the African-American community unless you have leadership who has a passion for engaging with those folks and speaking directly to them, regularly visiting their communities like I have, worshiping in African-American churches as I have, showing up in Ferguson and other parts of the urban core, whether it's an election year or not, as I have done throughout my career, trying to show goodwill and earning some trust. And that's why I went to Ferguson. The other reason I went is because I wanted my campaign to be a Republican campaign like no other, that actually goes in to those minority precincts where Republicans usually show up and ask for the vote and makes a sincere appeal without giving up any principle for the support of those folks. And that's what I've done. And I was introduced at that announcement by a dear friend of mine, an African-American businessman named Tony Thompson, who supports me as a Democrat. And so I have a record of actually reaching across party lines, knitting together Missourians, urban and rural, and it will take those kind of relationships to begin to knit back the trust factor that has been lost.
Let's move that question along to John Bruner.
Yeah, I'd like to build upon that because it is about building trust. But I don't have to visit Ferguson or go up to Ferguson because for over three decades, my manufacturing plant was in Wellston, an equally, if not more, difficult and tougher area of town. Three decades of creating jobs, adding jobs, building jobs, where people in the neighborhood left, they abandoned that area, they moved to Mississippi, they moved their business to China and Mexico. We kept the jobs there. And you know, folks, there's a lot of law and order in a job. And when you see the hopes and aspirations of people and families, when they can go out to the parking lot and say, John, come on out here, look at my new F-150, because they had the confidence of a good job, sending their kids to school, sending them to college. Three decades in working in this area leads me to believe without a shadow of a doubt it's all about turning the economy and providing hope for these kids when they're in school. And the teacher says, hey, you need to learn and study so you have a good job, but there's no jobs out there. Why learn? Why study? So I know this firsthand. I don't need talking points. I've been there. This has been my family for three decades. And I know with a business guy, with an outsider who's actually done it, we can create a much better opportunity, mutual respect, and begin to heal some of the wounds that unfortunately happened in Ferguson. And with Ferguson, yes, there's a lack of leadership. But unfortunately, Jay Nixon squandered the opportunities of building jobs and fixing schools those prior 6 years.
Let's move on down the line to Eric Reitens.
Yeah. Look, Jay Nixon failed at Ferguson, and Chris Koster, our state's chief law enforcement officer, failed at Ferguson. And now we are all experiencing the consequences of that. It's not just in St. Louis, but throughout the state of Missouri. You know, St. Louis is now the murder, rape, aggravated assault, and murder capital, per capita capital of the country. And we're seeing problems throughout the state of Missouri. Rates of violent crime in Springfield and Kansas City are triple the national average. We need to have a governor who's going to support our law enforcement officers. And the FBI has identified the problem. They call it the Ferguson effect. Policing is a profession built on the willingness of our police officers to make 100 difficult decisions every night. They need to decide whether or not they're going to go see the woman who gave them a tip last week or not, whether they're going to pull somebody over or not, whether they're going to stop on a corner and speak to a bunch of guys or not. And when they believe that Jay Nixon and Chris Koster don't have their back, it's harder for them to do their jobs, and that affects everyone. And the fact is, we have a serious problem in Ferguson and in communities across the state of Missouri, and it's not just related to police conduct. Folks, in the state of Missouri, African-American kids in high school, only 2.7% of them graduate high school having passed one AP class. That's the third worst rate in the country. Only 6% are graduating college ready on all four tests of the ACT. We are failing a generation of African-American young people here in the state of Missouri, and we need to have leaders who are willing to go in and address these problems on the front lines. That's what I've spent my life doing, not just as a Navy SEAL, not just as a champion who led the fight for the Mission Continues for veterans who are coming home, doing humanitarian work, running my own business. I'm going to go to the front lines and get results for the people of Missouri, and we're always going to support our law enforcement officers.
Catherine Hathaway.
Jason, thanks for the great question, and I really do want to address your question, which was, do I support independent review when there's an officer-involved shooting in this state? And as a former U.S. attorney who's prosecuted thousands of cases and worked hand-in-hand with law enforcement, I know it's a very difficult circumstance when you call upon law enforcement to essentially investigate themselves. So I am open to having a fresh set of eyes to look at an investigation when there's an officer-involved shooting. Maybe not every time. I think we need to look at some criteria for that. The Highway Patrol and the Attorney General's offices, I think both would be good independent authorities to take a look at it. The fundamental mistake that was made in Ferguson is that we had a governor who rushed to judgment, went to Ferguson and said almost immediately that the law enforcement officer should be indicted as soon as possible. He rushed to judgment, he didn't support police, and he got the facts wrong. Even the Department of Justice has now said that that officer did not use excessive force. We have to have a governor who's going to set the right tone, who's going to lead. Our attorney general, who was the chief law enforcement official when Ferguson happened, also failed us. He has a bully pulpit. He could have been outspoken. He could have supported a real fact-finding mission. He could have called for the prosecution of those who committed arson, who looted, who ruined businesses. He's done none of that. If he can't do the job he has now, I sure don't think that we should promote him to be Missouri's next governor. But at core, what we have is a breakdown in trust between communities and the police. And it results in a lot of real problems. Because the communities don't have a lot of trust, they won't come forward and be witnesses to crimes. I was shocked to learn when I became U.S. attorney that almost half the murders in the city of St. Louis go unsolved. And it's not because the police aren't doing their jobs. It's because it's very difficult to get people to come forward as witnesses. And so I support the police. I support building trust and relationships, investing in community policing efforts, and having harsher penalties for those who are the most violent in our cities, felons who choose to arm themselves again, those who use a gun in the commission of a crime, and anyone who shoots at a police officer.
Catherine, I have a question for you and for the others as well, if I may. Would we be a safer community if there were more guns in the hands of the public? And if so, how?
Well, that's a great question, Don, and it really depends on who you are including in the public. I believe that we are safer when law-abiding citizens have the ability to fully exercise their Second Amendment rights. If you look at the big mass shootings that have happened of late, time after time, they're in gun-free zones where the shooter knows that there is no threat that anyone is going to defend themselves. On a more narrow scale, we have seen here recently in the city of St. Louis a terrible case where a woman was carjacked and killed and her infant child left on the side of the road. A couple of days later, We saw an attempted carjacking and a man who had a concealed carry permit who defended himself, and he was not killed. So I think standing up for people's Second Amendment rights for law-abiding citizens is essential. But the other category is those who are criminals. And when I was U.S. attorney, I prosecuted hundreds of felon in possession of firearm cases. And I do think that we should keep guns out of the hands of criminals.
I want to come to Eric Greitens on this, but I want to do it last, if you don't mind. Let me go to the other gentlemen here, sure. Peter Kinder and John Bruner.
Well, I, as the only candidate in the race who has the National Rifle Association's highest rating of A+, for my advocacy for actually delivering wins on the Second Amendment rights of law-abiding Missourians, I am not for disarming law-abiding citizens. I believe that more guns in the hands of law-abiding citizens has been borne out as a good safety policy for our state over the last decade and more since we passed it over a Democratic governor's veto. One by one, all of the scare arguments from the liberal editorial boards against right to carry have been knocked down by the rising mountain of evidence. The leading scholar on this in the country is Professor John Lott, formerly may still be at Northwestern University. He wrote a book called More Guns, Less Crime. As right-to-carry statutes have spread across the country to 49 or 50 states in at least some form, the rate of violent crime has fallen. It is, however, in the hands of the tiny few criminal element that we see so much violence, and I agree, I don't agree with Chief Dotson here in the city of St. Louis on everything, but I do agree with his blog post of about 3 or 4 weeks ago where he took to task judges who were letting people out after violent crimes on minimal bail like $2,500, and that is just an outrage, and it's the governor of this state who appoints the judges, and I will darn sure make sure that we get judges who take that responsibility seriously.
John Bruner?
You know, I always believe that it's the responsibility of law-abiding citizens to uphold the Second Amendment, to fight for the Second Amendment, and, when necessary, to be armed and protect your lives and your property and your family. This past Valentine's Day, my wife and I surprised her instead of flowers and chocolates. We went for a CCW class. We're firing down range, got the training, got our permit. So we're prepared to do our part and defend our Second Amendment rights. But I tell you, it was really interesting. I just read a study that came out recently here from the University of Chicago. And they were asking and trying to determine where do criminals get their guns. Now, it takes the University of Chicago and one of the deadliest cities to figure this thing out. But after a tremendous expense, they found out that almost all the criminals get their guns on the streets. They don't go to gun shows and they don't go to gun shops. You know, so some of these attempts to restrict the Second Amendment rights of law-abiding citizens just doesn't work. Now, it's common sense for all of us to know that criminals don't get their guns at gun shows and gun shops, or at least 95% don't. So the whole issue, what we have to do here is be vigilant. As a young Marine, I raised my hand to defend the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic. That has no expiration date. I will continue to fight for our Second Amendment rights.
Okay, now, Eric Greitens, please.
Sure. Yeah, Don, I absolutely support people's constitutional right to protect themselves and their families. And we need to have a governor who's going to stand up and to protect the Second Amendment rights of every Missourian. And you absolutely have to prosecute felons who are in possession of a firearm. But you don't stop criminals by taking away the weapons of law-abiding Americans. So as governor, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to protect the rights of every citizen in the state of Missouri to protect themselves and their families.
I wanted to come to you last because there's a peripheral issue here regarding you, and that is the commercial that has been running for a good long while now, showing you shooting an automatic weapon and something exploding at the end. We've had, through our Public Insight Network, a number of people who complained about that, saying it was inappropriate, you should have taken it down after Orlando. Why didn't you?
Well, Don, that was an M4 that I was using. It's a semi-automatic rifle. It's the same rifle that I used to hunt terrorists in Iraq and Afghanistan. And we've actually had thousands of people around Missouri who stood up and said, we're glad that we have somebody who's willing to stand up and actually defend us.
Was it appropriate after Orlando?
Yes, Don. Look, my actions are not going to be dictated by a terrorist, by Omar Mateen. And let's be very clear about this. Just like there's a difference between a felon using a firearm and law-abiding Americans, there is a great difference between a terrorist using a rifle and a Navy SEAL using a rifle to actually hunt terrorists. And the people of Missouri are smart enough and thoughtful enough to recognize the difference between the two.
What the heck blew up at the end of that thing anyway?
That was a gasoline bomb, Don. It was rigged by a couple of Navy SEALs.
All righty. Thank you, Eric Reitens. Joe?
Okay. Some of our listeners also have been asking questions about campaign finance. Speaker Hanaway, a huge chunk of your campaign money is from financier Rex Ziegfeld or his allied groups. Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder, your largest donors by far are members of the Humphreys family. Eric Greitens, you have gotten huge donations from out-of-state business interests, some of them with legal problems. And John Bruner, you are financing most of your campaign out of your own pocket. Are each of you satisfied with how you and your rivals are financing your campaigns? Or would you like to see a change in the state's campaign laws? And if so, what? And I'd like to start with Eric Greitens.
Yeah, so actually, Joe, one of the things that we're very proud of and that we're satisfied with is that, you know, we don't have the data from this present quarter, but if you look back at quarter four of 2015 and Q1 of 2016, we raised more money in the state of Missouri than all of my opponents combined. I'm the only person in this race who's not a professional politician. I'm the only person who's never run for office before. And we saw people across the state of Missouri who wanted to invest in this race because they want to support an outsider who's willing to take on the political establishment. We have had, Joe, lots of donations from around the country, and that's because I was running a national organization. The mission continues, helping veterans in all 50 states come back home and find ways to start their own businesses, get quality private sector jobs. And when you change lives of people around the country and you get to know donors, patriotic donors around the country who support veterans, who support the country, when they heard that there was a strong conservative outsider who was running for office, they're also supporting our campaign.
Who would you like to next handle that, Joe?
Thank you. I think the one change we do need in our campaign finance laws is to have increasing transparency so that everyone knows who's giving to whom. We're doing better than we were a few years ago. That's why all the information that you just cited was readily available to you. But I think that people can make decisions if they have information. I think information is power. And if you look at the campaign finance reports, what you will find is that I have more donations from individual Missourians than any of the other candidates. Mr. Greitens wants to limit it to two quarters, but if you look at the entire campaign, I've raised more money in Missouri than any of the other people up here. You know, because you're able to look at the records, that I have Rex Ziegfeld as a donor, and he's given a tremendous amount to my campaign, but he is a Missourian who's pulled himself up by his bootstraps. And before he moved back to Missouri, I had a track record. I had been in the legislature. I supported right to work, tort reform, concealed carry, ending public funding for abortions. When he got back, I guess he decided to invest in my campaign and the things that I stand for. But I'm an independent person. I've been independent as speaker, as prosecutor, and I'm pleased that he's decided to support the things that I've been standing up for a very long time. Now, Mr. Greitens just characterized his national contributors as patriots. Many would characterize a man named Michael Gogan, who gave him over $1 million, as a sex abuser. He's been sued for that. His company has fired him as a result. He's already paid $10 million to the woman who made the allegations, Michael Gogan has. The John Kasich campaign, when it received $250,000 from this contributor, sent it off to a women's shelter. Now, for months, I've been calling on Mr. Greitens to please divest himself of that money, send it to a women's shelter. And yet, 2 days after this story broke, he attended a fundraiser with this same Mr. Gogan. Those aren't the kind of people we want investing in Missouri campaigns, and I wonder what all of this out-of-state money wants from the Missouri governor.
Eric Greitens, respond to that if you like.
Yeah, sure, Don. Look, Catherine Hanaway, Madam Speaker, you often distort the facts. And I've been very clear that I'm not going to try someone in the court of public opinion. You just said what happened to Darren Wilson was that it was inconvenient for politicians to defend him because he was tried in the court of public opinion. I'm not going to try people in the court of public opinion. I'm going to wait for the facts to come out and then make a decision. And look, we have to look at the evidence. And frankly, I like you, but I don't trust the way that you deal with the facts. You keep talking about how you supported concealed carry. You've actually opposed concealed carry in 3 different years. You called passing concealed carry extreme arrogance. You got a D rating from the NRA. What is it about concealed carry that you think was extreme arrogance?
Well, that's a very interesting question on your part. And I know you just said I distort the facts. You have just greatly distorted the facts. In point of fact, the last time I ran for office, the NRA gave me a B rating and said that I was the best choice for Missouri and that I was a friend to sportsmen and gun owners. The sponsor of concealed carry is on the radio now advocating for me and saying that it would not have been passed without my leadership in the House. I was speaker at the time. For years, the Democrats had tried to pass it. They were not able to do it. I voted against it when we were in the minority, but when I could became speaker and could do something about it, I supported it. We passed it. The governor vetoed it. I had to go find 18 Democrats to join with us. I did, and I passed historic legislation and got it to be the law for the first time in Missouri's history. And with respect to the court of public opinion, I know you don't want to take this abused woman's word for it, but you don't need to. Mr. Gogin himself has paid her $10 million. That's an admission. His company looked at the facts much more up close than you had the opportunity to and forced him out. He was a partner in that company. John Kasich looked at the facts and divested himself of the money. I don't know why you are trying to silence the voice of this abused woman and siding with Mr. Gogin for your own political gain.
We've got to Catherine bring this conversation Hanaway. Down to this end of the table.
Don, I
very,
think
very quickly, we have to get to the others, yeah. Eric Wright.
Yeah. You know, folks, here's the bottom line on all this. You know, and first of all, I reject Mr. Greitens. I've said it twice. He's the only one who's not a professional politician. I'm not a professional politician. I've served my country in the Marine Corps. I spent most of my life in business. I've served on the mission field. I'm here volunteering again. But let's move into the whole issue here on campaign finance reform and the issues that you're talking about, Joe. Here's the substance of it. Every single politician, you folks are here, no matter what they're running for office, everyone will say, I will fight for you. We've all heard that. I will fight for you. But the problem is, after they're elected, they're so indebted to the donor class that they don't have the freedom to fight for you. You know, their priorities are consumed with paying back the IOUs. So let's look at this here in this governor's race right now. If you take the top three donors, top three individuals of my three opponents, the top three donors who have contributed either from 20 to 60% of the total campaign funds, the top three. The top three donors in my campaign have donated 3%. But here's another issue. My opponent here to the right of me, Mr. Greitens, calls his donors investors. What do investors want? They want a return on their investment. I mean, that's the issue with politics, and that's why I keep telling folks across the state, you need a governor that can't be bought. I can't be bought. I'm here fighting for you, for your jobs, for your future, your opportunity, and I'm not indebted or beholden to anyone.
And, go ahead, Mr. Kidder.
And I think I get a shot. The answer to money in politics is full disclosure. Lay the facts out and let the people decide. We have that in 48-hour disclosure of checks as they come in and are deposited, donations. And what we don't have disclosure on is this shadowy money from PACs outside the state. I called on my announcement day for a positive campaign on the issues, and I have maintained that pledge, and I plan to continue to maintain that pledge. Now, I am all for laying some more facts on the table. My friend Catherine Hanaway is entirely correct in her indictment of the Gogin money, which I will go further and say is the dirtiest money that has ever been brought into any Missouri political campaign.
I agree.
There has never been a $1 million donor or any donor who was disclosed to the people of Missouri for having done what we know Gogin did. He paid off a mistress who was a victim of sex trafficking to the tune of at least $10 million. She is suing him. Now, we're cited to this example by the man who took the money and saying, well, to call for returning the money, as all three of us did back in March, is to prejudge the matter, and we should adhere to an innocent until proven guilty standard. Now, I don't think you have to be a lawyer to know the difference between innocent proven guilty applying in a criminal case and the lesser standard of proof or the expectations of the people in Missouri that do not go by innocence until proven guilty, but they can look at the facts before them and say, this is wrong. This is absolutely wrong. Governor John Kasich, within hours of learning about this dirty money, gave it to a charity. All three of us have toured the Covering House, right, a wonderful charity out in St. Louis County that ministers to these young ladies who are some as young as 9 years old. And I call on Eric Greitens to donate the entire $1 million to Covering House for the wonderful work they're doing saving lives.
So Don, let me be very clear here. It's not a surprise. It's not a surprise that we've got all three of the professional politicians on stage attacking me. Yes, professional politician, John. And John, you talk about campaign finance. John, your team, John, set up a super PAC, John. And your team, multiple media outlets have reported, is being investigated by the state and the federal government, John Bruner.
It's your own lawyer who's doing the investigation.
No,
listen,
John,
let's stick with the facts.
The facts are
the Covering House is a wonderful institution. Sex trafficking is bad. If you want to change ethics in the state, you have to go in your own backyard, and you have to follow
John
the money.
Bruner.
I'm asking everybody who's listening, go to the source and follow the money.
Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, John, I'm absolutely opposed to sexual abuse. I've worked in Cambodia with kids who've lost limbs to landmines, with kids who are survivors of polio. I've worked in Bosnia with kids who lost their parents during ethnic cleansing. I've worked in Rwanda with kids who lost their parents during the genocide. I've worked with children of the street in Bolivia, young girls who spend their days begging, selling gum and cigarettes, shining shoes. I've spent my life defending and getting results for people who are on the margins of society, especially young girls.
Peter, can you keep the dirty money?
Peter, this is your assertion that it's dirty money. And Peter, look, you are absolutely out of touch with the people of Missouri. You talk about what the people of Missouri want. You said that you're going impoverished on your $86,000 a year salary. You asked for a daily allowance of $103 for every day that you showed up to do your job. I think everybody in Missouri would like that. You've been in politics since I graduated from high school. You are absolutely out of touch with the people of Missouri, and you claim to speak for them.
Let's have Peter Kinder respond.
I think Eric should, every listener should go, should Google Gogin. Google G-O-G-U-E-N and the stories on this awful man and what he did to that young girl, a victim of sex trafficking. And we now have a candidate bidding to be the next governor of Missouri who has kept the money, and he's going to keep it and spend it in this primary, and the trial date for Mr. Gogin's legal matter is next June.
Peter Kinder.
It will be disposed of. The money will be spent. He will benefit from it. Win or lose, he benefits from it. And it's wrong, wrong, wrong. And I ask you to read the articles and tell me it's not wrong.
Lieutenant Governor Kinder is the only person on this stage, the last person on this stage, who should be trafficking in tabloid stories about men hanging out in strip clubs. Why don't you tell the people of Missouri about your own history, Peter?
I don't get into personal attacks. I'm talking about an issue.
I'm talking about you. Yes. You don't get into personal attacks, Peter Kinder. Lieutenant Governor Kinder, tell the people about your own history. The floor is yours.
You know, I think we need to raise the discussion
yes.
here.
You're exactly right.
John
really,
Bruner
I really
and
appreciate
the
anybody wants to do that.
Would you, your professional
the
politician,
into the,
people
into
who
the
keep
grain.
Money like this as a professional politician, let's carry this up now. Let's
move
it up.
We started this part of the discussion with the question of campaign finances, I believe, way back when. I want to have one addendum here for Catherine Hanaway. all the support you're getting from Mr. Singfield. Will you support his proposal for eliminating the state income tax then in favor of an expanded sales tax?
We definitely need to reduce the income tax in this state. I do not favor immediately eliminating it and replacing it with a sales tax. Every state we compete with and all those we border have more competitive income tax rates. The states with lower taxes are growing faster, creating more jobs. Their populations are increasing. Our tax rate is even higher than Illinois, which is no badge of honor. What we need to do is, first of all, repeal many of the crony capitalism tax credits that we have in the state. We give away every year more than $500 million that's collected from real people who work hard and pay their income taxes and give it to corporations who have well-connected lobbyists and insiders who get them tax credits. So one of the ways that I would work to cut the income tax for small businesses and for individuals is to close up some of those tax credit loopholes. We also need to shrink the size of government here in Missouri. We have 60,000 state employees. Indiana is a bigger state than us, and they only have 28,000 state employees. Our government is far too big, and we're putting too big a burden on our taxpayers, and it's driving quality jobs out of our state.
Let's go back to the questions. And Joe, are you ready, or is it Jason's turn?
Thank you, Joe and Don. Presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump proposed in the heat of the GOP primary a, quote, complete shutdown of Muslims from entering the U.S. until, quote, we know what's going on. Recently, he shifted that pledge, apparently, to bar Muslims from countries, quote, tied to Islamic terror. What is your opinion of such proposals, and how do you think this will impact Missouri if it's actually carried out? I'll start with John Bruner.
You know, Donald Trump is an interesting guy, to say the least, and I would agree with Senator Blunt that maybe the tone and some of the things he says could be a lot different here. You know, the real frustration that Donald Trump is tapping into all across America is a failure of the president to call Islamic terrorists and call the terrorists by their name, radical Islamic terrorism. And so he's tapping into that frustration. But I tell you, I think we have basic problems on our border that we need to take care of. And that's absolutely critical. We have drugs coming up through the border, up Interstate 44. We have tremendous drug abuse here in Missouri. We have a lot of problems in this state. And, yes, he's a presumptive nominee, but I tell you, the alternative is significantly worse. We cannot afford Hillary Clinton's appointments to the U.S. Supreme Court. We can't afford Hillary Clinton continuing on with Obama's program of the EPA and destroying our energy and destroying our farms and destroying our businesses. You know, that is not an option. So I always tell folks, you know, because this presidential race is so distractive and so divisive, and there's strong opinions on all sides, I tell folks across Missouri, we can take this country back one state at a time. And it begins right here in Missouri, in the governor's race. This is where change can really happen. This is where opportunities can really happen. This is what our founding fathers envisioned. It's in the governor of the states. Back in the 10th Amendment, in kicking the regulators back across the Potomac where they belong, and getting a good attorney general, not like the one we have right now, the do-nothing Chris Coster type. And I tell you, folks, with a good governor, with an outsider, a business person who's had decades of experience here solving problems, creating jobs and opportunities, I'll bring one other point. Everyone talks about on-the-job training. Listen, I'm the only candidate here who's had extensive experience in leadership in a business and running a business and budgets and assets and goals and hiring people and finding good people to run an operation and be highly successful, creating thousands of jobs and opportunities across the state. I'm the only one who's had actual command experience in the military. You know, I have the experience to get the job done, and I'm ready to lead. We have a good opportunity in the governor's race, and I'd like the citizens of Missouri to focus on the governor's race.
All right. Bruner, thank you, John Bruner. Do you support that proposal or not? I don't feel like you answered the question.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a more rhetorical statement. I mean, it's a rhetorical statement. It's a political statement. You know, I don't know of any serious plan behind that.
Okay. Lieutenant Governor Kinder.
I do not support a blanket ban on any religious or ethnic group. I do support a pause in immigration from folks from countries that are known state sponsors of terrorism, such as Syria, and that's why I was the first candidate and the only statewide elected official to speak out when this issue arose last year and to challenge my other five constitutional officers of state government to speak out against it and to oppose bringing in Syrian immigrants who cannot be vetted. You know, we were told they can be vetted, but then San Bernardino happened late last year, and we know that those people went through whatever the federal vetting process is. So the FBI has failed us. I hate to say that for such an institution that has had such an unblemished record for so long, but they failed us most recently on Mateen in Orlando. They failed us again and again, and we need this pause. I will say that although I began my day here on Independence Day, I closed it out in my hometown of Cape Girardeau, attending a naturalization ceremony for 14 new legal American citizens, legal immigrants to our shores. If you've never been to a naturalization ceremony, it's one of the most inspiring things you could ever do. I urge you to take one in. That's the way it should be done. We should be welcoming legal immigration.
Let's get responses from the other candidates, Eric Greitens and Catherine Hanaway.
Yeah, of course there should be no religious test. That's unconstitutional. We absolutely have to have in place a process to properly screen people who are coming into this country. Missouri has always been a welcoming state. The United States of America has always been welcoming. After the Berlin Wall fell and Glasnost started, Missouri welcomed thousands of Jews who were fleeing from Russia. I worked in Bosnia with victims of ethnic cleansing. We have tens of thousands of fantastic Bosnian citizens here in the state of Missouri. But you have to have a screening process for people who are coming from Iraq and from Syria. You can buy right now a fake passport on the black market in Turkey. So you have to have a screening process. And we have to have leaders at every level who are willing to recognize the threat of radical Islamic terrorism, who are willing to call it by its name, and who are willing to stand up and to defeat it.
Catherine Hanaway?
We should not discriminate against anyone based on their religious beliefs, and I certainly would not support a ban on people coming to this country because of their religious beliefs. The First Amendment to our Constitution says that the government shall establish no religion and that we shall all have the right to freely exercise our religion. But I do join with a majority of governors around the country who say that we should not be allowing people to relocate to our states when they are coming from state sponsors of terrorism and until we can adequately check out their backgrounds. It is tragic. It is profoundly disturbing what has happened as a result of radical Islamic terrorism to the country of Syria. My heart bleeds for those people who have to be refugees from that country. But we don't want to import that radical Islamic terrorism to the state of Missouri. And until we can find out who's coming and what their background is, we should not be relocating those refugees to Missouri. Governor Nixon has been welcoming of them. I do not think we should do that until we can thoroughly vet their backgrounds.
I have a quick follow-up for each of you. You can answer yes or no or elaborate if you like. I'll start with you, Catherine Hanaway. If you are the candidate, would you be totally comfortable with Donald Trump at the top of the ticket?
No, I wouldn't be totally comfortable with Donald Trump at the top of the ticket, but I'm going to vote for him because my two choices are Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And I believe that Hillary Clinton, as disclosed yesterday by the director of the FBI, has committed crimes by the mishandling, the careless, reckless handling of classified information, and that if she were an employee at Boeing or just a low-level member of the military or of law enforcement and handled classified information in the same way, she would be being indicted. But she also favors abortion on demand until the moment of delivery. She wants to take away our Second Amendment rights. She would appoint Supreme Court justices who would advance that agenda. Just right down the line, she is diametrically opposed to almost everything I stand for. And those are my two choices. And so I will support the Republican nominee, but I wish he would change his tone. I wish he would not say inflammatory and discriminatory things. And I wish and I hope that what he's going to lead us to is a future of greater economic prosperity where we continue to be the greatest nation on the face of the earth.
Okay, I'll go down the line. A quicker response, if you wouldn't mind, Eric and John and Peter Kinder.
Yeah, Don, we're all united in the belief that Hillary Clinton cannot be the next commander-in-chief. I mean, what she did with her emails, I had a top-secret security clearance when I was a Navy SEAL. If I or anyone on my team had done just once the thing that she has admitted to doing dozens, perhaps hundreds of times, you would have been immediately court-martialed, lose your security clearance, and kicked out of the military. The fact that she hasn't suffered any consequences at all is just a demonstration of the fact that the political system is rigged. And that's one of the reasons why people are so hungry to have an outsider who's willing to come in and actually change politics as usual.
John Brunner?
Yes, of course, not everyone's comfortable with Donald Trump, but we all agree that the alternative is infinitely worse. You know, the issue here in this state is I understand why half the state went for Donald Trump, and by less than 2,000 votes, the other half went to Ted Cruz. People are hurting for an outsider, a business person, someone proven and get the job done. That's what I've done my whole life. I've proven it in the jobs. But also, I have the similar values of Ted Cruz. I'm a lifetime constitutional conservative, and I'm a man of faith. And so back again to refocus, here in this governor's race, we can get the job done with John Brunner as your next governor.
Let's refocus on my question. Peter Kinder, can you be brief?
Focusing on your question, I would not be totally comfortable with Donald Trump any more than I was totally comfortable with, say, Senator McCain, on with whom I ran on the same ticket, or Governor Romney most recently. I'm not totally comfortable with any other person. I speak for myself, and I take stands that I'm willing to defend. And I would say also that I abhor the alternative, and we now have the possibility of a president being sworn in January who would never get a security clearance in any administration, who would never pass the FBI background check, and that is just abominable that we have that possibility before us.
All right, let's bring it back to Missouri, and Joe, we'll have your next question,
okay.
Please.
The U.S. Supreme Court recently tossed out certain restrictions on abortion clinics in Texas. And those restrictions, which dealt with hospital privileges and certain ambulatory care center requirements, are very similar to the ones in place in Missouri. Both sides expect a court fight here very soon to formally toss out the Missouri provisions in order to put some abortion clinics back in business or new ones. As governor, what would you do? I'd like to start with Lieutenant Governor Kinder.
I would fight to defend the Missouri statutes. Let me ask something. If the concern is women's health, how is it anything but an advance in hygiene and an advance in women's health to require that an abortionist physician has admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles if something goes wrong? How is that anything but an advance that we would impose reasonable restrictions that were passed with bipartisan votes in this state to support women's health, to support the life of the innocent unborn? I'm the only candidate in this race who has the Missouri Right to Life Defender of Life Award on my wall for passing the first bill banning partial birth abortion. Now, what the fate of our case would be in the federal courts, I don't know. The odds may not be good, but you bet I'd launch the battle. And I will say this also about that ruling a couple of weeks ago. It was last week, whenever it was the most pro-abortion ruling, and I believe anti-women's health ruling, since Roe v. Wade. And it will have to be revisited, I hope, by a future United States Supreme Court that will overturn it. It was wrongly decided. We are right in Missouri to pass laws with bipartisan support that support women's health in the fashion that we have done.
John Brunner, we'll just go right down the line with this. Go ahead.
Well, I'm also pleased to receive the endorsement by Missouri Right to Life. And just as a side note, 5 days ago, my 12th grandchild was born, had a chance to hold him last night. I had 12 opportunities. I will always fight for life. You know, what I did here, I went and I talked to what I hope are one of the two presumed next attorney generals. Both I talked to Josh Hawley and also Kirk Schaefer. I said, what would you do? What can we do if I'm the next governor and you're the next attorney general? And they agree with Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder. This was a despicable ruling. Oh, this is very, very tough. Life is under attack, and you're going to need a governor and an attorney general that will fight for life all the way. Basically, their answer, independent of each other, came back to me and says, it's going to come down to funding. What can we do to stop or slow the funding? Because it is, Joe, as you said, it's going to be a big court fight. It's going to be throughout a number of states. It'll be here in Missouri. And it is a horrible ruling. But at the end of the day, standing for life is my number one principle.
Eric Reitens, go ahead.
Look, I'm pro-life. And in Missouri, we need to do everything that we can to defend the lives of the unborn. And my pro-life views come from the things that I've actually done. I've worked in one of Mother Teresa's homes for the destitute and dying. And I've seen the amazing power that comes when we're willing to say that every life matters. And we're willing to act with leaders who have compassion to defend every life. I've also seen, when I worked in an orphanage in Albania, what can happen when certain kids are thrown off and they are cast off. We need to have leaders who are willing to defend every life and defend the lives of the unborn. You know, Sheena and I are blessed to have two young boys, Joshua, who's 23 months old, and Jacob, who is 36 days old. And when I think about looking at that ultrasound, seeing a young life, and it is absolutely a life. We need to have leaders who are willing to stand up and defend the lives of the unborn, and that's what I'm going to do when I'm governor.
Catherine Hanaway.
I'm very pleased to have the endorsement of Missouri Right to Life. The sanctity of human life is fundamentally important to me. If you care about the right to life, you should be wary of Mr. Greitens when he says he's pro-life, as he just did, as he says on his website. He is the only candidate up here who was not endorsed by Missouri Right to Life. In fact, I understand that he did not even respond to some reasonable questions that they had, just as he did not respond to the question that was asked tonight about what he would do about Missouri's laws that require a physician to be with admitting privileges within 30 miles and that the places where abortion services are provided meet the surgical center standards. I think it's interesting that the U.S. Supreme Court would choose to strike down two measures that seem so clearly targeted at protecting the health of women, and that the abortion industry, who constantly says they're standing up for the health of women and that they want to put an end to back alley abortions, would say cheers to this decision. It just seems hypocritical to me at best, disingenuous at worst. When I was Speaker of the House, we ended public funding of abortions. We put in place the first ever 24-hour waiting period on abortions. As governor, I'll stand up for Missouri's current pro-life laws, and I will seek to continue to do everything that I can to protect the innocent lives of unborn children and the health of mothers.
Thank you. And we have time, I think, for one more question. And Jason Rosenbaum, I'll give that to you. And I'll ask the panelists, please. Time is getting away, so keep your answers as concise as you can, please.
Many candidates in both parties this year have pledged to ban gifts from lobbyists and make it more difficult for a lawmaker to become a lobbyist. But I witnessed, along with many of my colleagues in political reporting this year in the Missouri General Assembly, the Senate blocking a lot of these ideas, and many of these senators are going to be back next year regardless. So how do you translate your rhetoric on that issue into legislative reality? And since Mr. Greitens has an ad that was just released on that topic, I'd like to for you to go first.
Well, the first way that we turn rhetoric into reality is to actually elect someone who hasn't taken gifts from lobbyists. And Catherine Hanaway, Speaker Hanaway, and Lieutenant Governor Kinder have taken thousands of dollars in gifts from lobbyists. In fact, you can't actually tell how many thousands of dollars they've taken in gifts from lobbyists because the records at the Missouri Ethics Commission prior to 2000 are no longer available.
It's supposed to be a state archive, and those records are no longer there. What kind of archive is that? And it's just another demonstration that our political system is rigged. You need to have leaders who are willing to come in and actually walk the talk and ban gifts from lobbyists. And you know what we're going to do as governor? I will work with any member of the legislature who's willing to work with me on banning gifts from lobbyists. And if the legislature is going to fight against that, we're still going to get it done, and I will go to the people, and we will find a way to put this on the ballot. We're going to ban gifts from lobbyists when I'm governor.
Mr. Greitens mentioned Peter Kinder and Catherine Hanaway in his response. Would either of you like to respond to him before answering the question? Catherine
Hanaway.
I'll
be happy to answer the question and respond.
All right, go ahead.
First of all, I haven't held any office or run for any office in 12 years. If you go back and look at the records, I might have had dinner with a lobbyist and it got reported as a gift. But my record is very clear for standing up for ethics reform. In fact, I've already gotten one of my campaign initiatives passed into law, even though I'm not governor yet. I was the first to start calling for truth in campaign finance, because we had a situation here in Missouri where people would say they were running for a particular office, raise as much as $1 million, and then not run for that office and also not refund that money to their donors. In fact, they'd use it to go build a lobbying career by making donations to other politicians. That got banned this year. I know how to work with the legislature, and so to work with those senators, obviously I know where the levers of power are and how to say to them, look, you have objectives that you want to achieve. This is my most important objective, to restore the public trust. So, yes, I would ban gifts from lobbyists. I would work with the Senate and the House to make sure it got done, just as I did time and time again in successfully passing legislation when I was there. And I would also close the revolving door where somebody can be a legislator one day and the next day go out and be a lobbyist. This year, I think the legislature quite honestly paid lip service to that principle. They passed a 6-month ban. I think that that is maybe exhibit A of how our legislature is breaching the public trust when they say that that's closing the revolving door. Because 6 months means the very next term they can be back there lobbying the very people they served with. I support a 4-year ban on somebody leaving the legislature and going out to lobby.
Let's get Peter Kinder's take on that.
I support a ban as well, not less than 2 years, and I would support it for more than that. Everything about lobbyists' gifts through the years, and I've taken none this year, and minimal last year. The only lobbyist gifts I took last year were to allow my office, which has no budget for this, to welcome Missourians at the inaugural party on that night in January where we had refreshments and cold cuts. Look, everything that has ever been taken has been reported on any of us, and that's, again, like full disclosure, lay the facts on the table and let the people decide. What we really need to bear down on in this case is the dirty money from Mr. Gogan that has been mentioned here before and that has not been answered. It was answered with a personal attack on me on some things that happened well more than 20 years ago and which were fully litigated in my last campaign, where I had $3 million of slamming ads against me, and the people heard it all, shrugged their shoulders, and said, we're going to make our decision on other matters, on the issues and the facts that matter to this state and to our people.
I think we're beginning to drift a little bit on this one. Mr. Kinder,
John. The lobbyist ban, gift ban. I support the revolving door end of not less than 2 years, and I would support more. And I want full transparency and disclosure of all donations in our campaigns and let the people decide.
John Bruner.
Yes, sir. Leaders lead by example. They lead by what they do, not what they say. A little less talk and a lot more action is needed. I saw our industry and our business clean up, led by one major customer who banned all gifts. You couldn't buy a newspaper, a Coca-Cola, a lunch, a newspaper, anything. And I saw the whole professional raise in our industry. And I'll tell you what I'll do. On the very first day, the first hour as your next governor, I'll issue a directive to everybody in the executive branch. No more gifts, no more free meals, no more junkets, no more golf games, no more anything. We're going to be back to business and a professional business. And it is true, and I agree with Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder. You know, lobbyists give campaign contributions. I want to tell folks here tonight listening, follow the money. I can't be bought, my friends. That's really critical. I'm under a lot of attack ads, $3 million of attack ads. They're coming at me. Why? Because I'm the true outsider that can't be bought. Why else do they want me out of the way? So we need to lead with ethics reform. We have to lead in terms of campaign contributions as well as lobbyist gifts. That will be my goal day one as your next governor.
Okay, you were so concise on that level there that we do have time for one more question. Again, you'll have to be even more concise.
Don, just to make sure, just for full transparency then, everyone said that they're in favor of transparency. Let's have everyone here disclose all of the gifts that they've taken from lobbyists, all of the special interest tax credits, all of the meals, food, and beverages that were paid for by lobbyists, all of the entertainment that was paid for by lobbyists. Let's have everyone who's here disclose that.
Okay.
I'd be happy to do that. And I would call upon Mr. Greitens to disclose every time he was paid to give a speech, how much money the taxpayers paid for his White House fellowship, how much money the taxpayers paid for his Truman Fellowship at the University of Missouri. There are a number of times that Mr. Greitens has said he is an outsider. He is an insider of the highest magnitude. If you can get a White House fellowship, if you get the Truman Fellowship at the University of Missouri, if he wants all of us to disclose the benefits that we have gotten in public service, I would ask that he disclose every penny he's ever received from taxpayers or corporations, speaking about his experience as a Navy SEAL, writing about his experiences as a Navy SEAL, or as a White House fellow or a Truman Scholar.
Yeah, it's getting repetitive. We have a quick response. Eric Greitens, 15 seconds, if you would. We've got to move on.
I just think that Speaker Hanaway is confused about what a White House fellow is. I just think she just doesn't understand the basic facts. I was honored that President George W. Bush chose me to be one of his White House fellows, and I was honored to serve there. I think she's simply confused about some very basic facts about the White House Fellowship Program, but I'd be happy to speak with her afterwards.
All right, and let's go to Joe Manis.
Now, this one we're going to need a really short response, but many of our listeners want to know your opinion of steering state money to private or religious schools or setting up some sort of voucher programs. So I'd like to start with Bruner. Just please make this very quick. This has to do with education money.
Yeah, I'm very concerned about state money controlling independent schools or religious schools in particular. I'm concerned about the control, but I do know the problems that we have in inner city schools. We need choices. We need opportunities. But the way to solve those problems is not in the voucher system, but is to bring local control back to the local school boards and the local school districts, bring money back to the teachers in the classrooms. The number one issue that all the superintendents have told me across the state is flexibility. So, yes, we have to fix these schools, particularly Jackson County, St. Louis County. We have huge opportunities, but we also have some great examples of some great schools.
Lieutenant Governor Kinder.
I'm not supporting a voucher program, but I do support significantly increased school choice for parents. I do not believe that a one-size-fits-all public school system designed 150 years ago when we were an agrarian society is going to cut it in the 21st century. An institutionalized, a bureaucratized, unionized urban public school system is a systematic form of child abuse. And a school board member in this city told me 8 or 9 years ago, sadly, we are preparing students for one of three fates, either a lifetime of poverty, or pack them off to the penitentiary, or an early trip to the cemetery. Now, that haunts my conscience. You bet I want more choices for parents. I want the Arizona scholarship model. I want to help disabled students by extending the scholarships that are an advance in school choice that have worked in Indiana and Arizona and Florida and other states. I want to do something like that because I'm looking at this as first port in the storm. We've got to help these mostly poor minority parents, mostly many of them single parents, who have no alternatives in this system, and they're losing their kids, and we're losing a generation. We've lost a couple of generations, and we're losing another one, and I won't let that happen on my watch.
Okay, my next two candidates, please keep it to about a minute, if you would. Eric Reitens, why don't you start it?
Look, it's absolutely essential that we do everything that we can to make sure that kids in Missouri have a shot at a quality education. My life changed because I got a quality education. That enabled every opportunity that came my way. And the fact is, there are lots of kids and parents in the state of Missouri who simply aren't getting a shot at a quality education. So what we need to do is expand every opportunity that we can to make sure that there is more choices for those kids who are in failing schools, more choices for kids who have special needs. And this is a problem. A lot of times we focus in Missouri just on what's happening in some of our failing inner city schools. It's actually a problem in so many of our rural school districts. You know, in 262 of our school districts here in the state of Missouri, not a single child was able to take an AP class. That's an advanced placement class, which would allow them to demonstrate their ability to get into good colleges, allow them to earn college credit. And there are other states where they've done course access programs to make sure that those kids in schools that don't offer those AP classes are able to get them. That's just one piece of a much larger puzzle. But with the right kind of leadership, we can make sure that every kid in Missouri gets a quality education.
Catherine Hanaway.
My maternal grandfather had a second grade education, but he valued education, and he made sure that his three children, my mom, her sister, and her brother, the two girls went to nursing school, and the brother went to engineering school, that they got a higher education. We need to be making that opportunity to get through school and to be qualified to go on to a great job available to all Missouri kids. And I think the way that we do that is to put parents in charge, to give them every choice available, that they decide how to spend the tax dollars that would be dedicated to their child's education and determine whether that's a parochial school, a public school, a charter school, a magnet school, or the most selfless choice of all, homeschooling.
Thank you all. Now we've come to the point in the program where we're going to go to the closing statements. You have 1 minute each to do that. The order will be the same as it was when we started this exercise this evening. That means that John Bruner gets the first crack at it. Go ahead, John Bruner.
Well, thank you again, those who are here, as those listening, driving in your car. You know, as John Bruner, as your governor, you'll get a veteran, a Marine. You'll get a lifetime constitutional conservative, a person who puts his faith into action, a person who believes in our national motto, "In God We Trust, Not in Government." As a businessman, my mission for Missouri will be to improve the lives of all Missourians. As I spoke to over 950 high school students, I said, "You young people need a shot at the American dream, and I'll do everything I can to help you get there. But we must change direction. We must win an election in order to have this opportunity." And I offer that one compelling contrast, a contrast between our Attorney General, the Democrat, who is a trial lawyer who kills jobs, versus a businessman and manufacturer who creates jobs, between a liberal insider and a constitutional conservative outsider, between a politician and a Marine. For all of those listening to this debate, I am that clear choice, that compelling contrast to win. I ask for your vote, your support, and your prayers. 2017 can be a great year for Missouri. We can get back on track. We can bring back the American dream. I'm here to do the job for you. I'm volunteering to serve.
Thank you, sir.
God continue to shed his grace and mercy on America.
Thank you. And now Catherine Hanaway.
I humbly ask for your vote and your support. My mission is to restore our constitutional principles and to bring great quality jobs back to Missouri so we stop losing generations of our young people to other states because there simply aren't jobs here for them. If I have the privilege of taking the oath of office as your next governor, when I take that oath of office, I'll be thinking about a moment a little over 12 years ago when my husband and I went to Eastern Europe to an orphanage with more than 300 kids in it under the age of three and picked up our son. And we went to the courts there, and we saw a judge and a lawyer representing the state in military uniforms. We saw public housing for almost everyone, very few private cars. We saw, in short, the ravages of a centrally controlled state, the ravages of communism. So when we came back to the United States, and the last federal agent we saw said to us, "Congratulations, Mr. and Mrs. Hanaway, your son is an American. I heard that word really with my heart for the first time.
We have to end it there. I'm afraid the time is up, Catherine Hanaway.
Thank you, and God bless you all.
Thank Eric Greitens.
The choice in this election is clear. If you're happy with the results that you're getting from government, then you should vote for any one of my opponents, because you can be sure that with them, nothing will change. My opponents represent the status quo. Combined, they have been in more than 20 total elections. Now, if they were going to make a difference, wouldn't they have done it already? But if, like me, you're outraged by the failures of our government, if you're fed up with the political establishment, and you're tired of self-serving politicians who are just looking at the next fundraiser, the next perk or a free meal from a lobbyist, or just thinking about the next election, then join me. I'm Eric Greitens. I'm a Navy SEAL. I've never run for office before, but I know that with strong conservative leadership from outside of the political establishment, we can turn Missouri around. We can build a Missouri that we are proud to pass on to our children, and together we can put an end to politics as usual.
Thank you, Eric Greitens, and now Peter Kinder with the last word.
And I humbly ask for your support, as I have before, and you've extended to me that trust and support. The times are too uncertain now to go with someone you don't know, someone who's making a lot of windy rhetorical assertions with nothing to back it up. A candidate, for instance, who says he's pro-life and won't talk to Missouri's leading pro-life group, the Missouri Right to Life, won't even speak to them. The next governor must be someone who can unite our party and our state, our party for the fall campaign against a formidable opponent, and our state after the election. I have done that. I have gotten a few more votes by coming here to the urban area where Republicans usually don't even show up and asking for the vote, and I've still carried 109 of 114 counties across our state. I'm your trusted conservative. I'm your proven winner. I'm your best bet to go into the fall campaign. I humbly ask for your support for governor.
Thank you, Peter Kinder. That brings us to the end of our debate featuring the Republican candidates for governor in the August 2nd primary. Our thanks once again to businessman John Bruner, author Eric Greitens, former Missouri House Speaker Catherine Hanaway, and three-term Missouri Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder, and to political reporters Joe Manis and Jason Rosenbaum. Our thanks, too, to our sister stations, KCUR in Kansas City, KBIA Columbia, KMST in Rolla, KSMU in Springfield, KRCU in Cape Girardeau, KXCV in Maryville, and thanks, too, to our audience at home and those joining us here in the St. Louis Public Radio Community Room. Thank you all. This has been a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.